Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be learning Yeshayahu Perek Yud. This past week, I had the pleasure of hearing Dr. Micha Goodman, an Israeli author, speak, and he said something interesting. He said, in Tanakh, we find not always the answers, but sometimes the questions. And I would say that Perek Yud of Yeshayahu is a good example of this point. It gives insight into some important philosophical questions while opening up others. The specific topic of chapter 10, Perek Yud, is how Hashem may use one party in order to punish another. Meaning, working with the principle of Schar Ve'Onesh, which is punishment and reward, there are two major ways that Hashem will punish a community or a nation. One way is through nature, such as famine, a drought, an earthquake. The other way is through the hand of mankind, by using one nation to affect punishment on another. And it's this second method that Yeshayahu speaks about in this parak, beginning in Pasuk Yud, verse 10, when he says, Hoy Ashur Shevet Api, Assyria is the rod of my anger. Now, what Hashem is explaining here is that Assyria, who is currently the oppressor of Israel, right, the oppressor of both the northern kingdom, and who's, we know that Assyria exiled the northern kingdom of Israel in 722 BCE, and also the oppressor of the southern kingdom of Jerusalem. But Assyria is merely a tool to implement divine punishment on Israel. And the metaphor is apt because a stick, of course, is powerless to hit on its own. It's only the will of whoever holds that stick that brings about the act of the striking. So Assyria is just that stick, and the power to strike is only because Hashem, so to speak, gives that power as a way to effect punishment on Israel. Now, of course, this opens up a different question regarding the question of free will. If Hashem has a plan in which one nation needs to be punished and he uses another nation to carry that punishment out, then do we really have free will? In this case in particular, the question would be, did Assyria really plan to attack Israel, or was this action predestined by Hashem? Okay, related to this is, again, the punishment of reward and punishment. If Assyria is simply carrying out the will of God, then why does Assyria deserve punishment, right? They're doing what Hashem wants them to do. Now, this question is actually similar to this is not the first time that this question comes up in Tanakh. For example, this comes up about Paro and Egypt in the story of the oppression that the Jews suffered in Mitzrayim. Since the suffering in Egypt was predicted in Brit Bein HaBetarim, when Hashem told Abraham that this would be something that would happen to the Jewish people in the future, right? Then how could Paro and his people be punished? And it's addressed there and also addressed here. Now, this second question, the question about why Assyria would deserve to be punished if they're really carrying out Hashem's will, Yeshayahu himself answers in the next few psukim when he spends time discussing Assyria's intentions in going to war. And here he says, V'hu lo kein yidameh, v'levavo lo kein yachshov, ki lehashmid bilvavo, v'lehachrik goyim lo ma'at. Meaning, in Assyria's mind, they're not going into this thinking that they are implementing divine will. Rather, ki lehashmid bilvavo, in their heart, is the desire of destruction and the desire to wipe out many nations. And what Yeshayahu explains here is that Assyria is not blameless. Instead, Assyria inhabits this role as a conqueror, meaning a conqueror who has no limits to her force and her power. Hashem asserts here through Yeshayahu that Assyria will also be punished, and he indicates that the punishment will occur on Har Tzion in Jerusalem. So while Assyria, just to pause for a second here, Assyria is the implement that's punishing Israel, but in the future, Assyria will also be punished. And interestingly, that punishment will occur through Israel. Now, what does that mean? Radak and Malbim both suggest that this is actually referring to a historical event. Now, in 702, right, we spoke about the time period, the heyday of Assyria in 722 when they exiled the northern kingdom, the 10 lost tribes. But in 702, Assyria continued their campaign of world domination, moving south to Jerusalem, where they waged war against the city. And in a shocking and surprising upheaval, the Assyrian army that came to camp outside of Jerusalem was miraculously decimated by Malach Hashem outside of Jerusalem. And Sefer Melachim describes this miraculous event. Yeshayahu interprets this as not only a salvation of Jerusalem, which it certainly is, but also a fitting punishment for the hubris of Assyria. Now, why is this punishment so fitting? It's because it's this defeat at Jerusalem, where Jerusalem is protected by divine hand, that comes to teach Assyria that they're not the all-powerful and the unstoppable nation that they think they are. But there's a moment of learning there, so to speak, a moment of reckoning, where they too could realize that they also are a tool in the hands of Hashem. The parak closes then by turning back to Bnei Israel, and in Pasuk Chaf, Yeshayahu says, "Vayhaya bayom hahu, lo yosif od shar Yisrael upleitat beit Yaakov lihisha'in al makehu." Right, and then on that day, then shar Yisrael, the leftovers, the remnants of Israel, and that's a recurring word that we've seen throughout Yeshayahu, right? And whoever's left of Beit Yaakov, they will no longer be able to rely and to rest on the one who hits them, meaning Assyria. Remember that they were Shevet Api, the stick of God's wrath, v'nishan al Hashem, kadosh Yisrael be'emet, and instead they will be finally able to rest and depend on Hashem, who is truly the one who they should be depending on. And this pasuk, I think, expresses so beautifully the reconnecting between us and Hashem that will take place. Previously, right, Israel relied on our captor. And this has happened, again, many times in Jewish history, calling to mind almost an abusive relationship where instead of turning away and finding new life, right, the captive consistently turns back to the oppressor, hoping for the security that they'll never really receive. Instead, this pasuk promises a new beginning where we can rely on Hashem and rebuild our emunah and our faith that Hashem will have our back. Now, in closing, there's a recurring theme that I think we've seen throughout Yeshayahu, and the truth is a theme that comes up throughout Tanakh, which is the theme of arrogance and the failing, really, of arrogance. And it's interesting that when this parak, which describes in depth the arrogance of specifically of Assyria, uses an interesting language, it says, Assyria says, "Ki amar bekoach yadi asiti, ubachachmati kinevunoti." Right? Assyria thinks as they do things, "Bekoach yadi asiti, I'm doing this with the might of my own hands. Ubachachmati, and it's with my wisdom or my skill, right, that I'm doing everything that I accomplish. All the destruction that I'm bringing out, all the world domination, it comes from me." And that's what they use in order to va'asir gvulot amim, va'atu dotehem, shoseti va'orid ka'abir yoshvim. And through this, right, through this wisdom, that's the way that I destroy different boundaries. I can, plunder the treasures of different nations and exile their vast populations. And that is what we know that Assyria did. They would conquer one area, take the treasures, exile the people, and then repopulate that area. And Assyria is held to task for the fact that they say, "Bekoach yadi asiti." And it's interesting here that the language parallels the language of Devarim, which also says, speaks to the Jewish people and says, when you enter into the land of Israel, right, there's a natural inclination once you become a farming nation to say, it's my own strength that allowed me to accomplish all of this. And then Hashem continues with that message, "Lo ki, I'm the one who gave you the koach, I gave you the strength, lasod chayel, to accomplish. And it's interesting here that the language of a serious sin parallels also the sin of the people, the sin of the Jewish people, on sort of the feared sin of arrogance when they enter into Israel. And this sin of arrogance is something that universally all nations are held accountable for. Everybody is held to task for arrogance, and no one is free from the dangers of success. And secondly, we started by talking about questions. And this parak discusses the tension between what we could call divine providence, Hashem's intervention in the world, and free will, right? Our ability to act freely through our own free choices. And in truth, whenever Hashem opens up more room for free will, then there's less divine providence. It seems like there's less of Hashem's intervention. And whenever there's more of Hashem's control, then there's less room for people to have free will. And the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim speaks about this struggle and says that it's really almost, it's impossible for man to really fully understand how to deal with this conundrum of this battle almost between divine providence and free will. Yet he still held on to the idea that while both of these exist in tension with each other, they're also fundamentals of our experience and relationship with Hashem. And perhaps we have never felt this tension more intensely than this time period, the time period where we battle the coronavirus, where we feel the importance of our own actions, and yet we recognize Hashem's control and daven for his intervention. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.